and welcome to the Heart-Centered Horsemanship Academy podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 20. I'm Kimberly Horman, and today we're going to talk about when a horse has experienced trauma. Often, when I meet a dangerous or unpredictable horse, what I'm really working through with that horse is trauma. So, are you dealing with aggression or panic? How do we unpack this with our horses? And most importantly, how do we identify and address the issue? So let's get started. Trauma can take many forms in horses. Problems that seem to come out of nowhere can be linked to trauma a horse has experienced before you came into their lives. This can look like increased anxiety or disconnect when riding in certain areas or conditions. It could look like aggressive or evasive behavior around being saddled, or an unusually heightened level of sensitivity to grooming tools, farrier tools, whips, or other common things around the barn. Trauma can also manifest through stall vices such as weaving, cribbing, or pacing. When we unknowingly expose our horses to something that triggers a trauma response, it is likely that their behavior around the situation will not improve without mindful and knowledgeable work from their handlers, trainers, and owner. We may not know that a horse was beaten with a broom to get onto the trailer. We may not have had a saddle fitter out, and the horse is associating their saddle with a high level of discomfort. We may not know that a horse has experienced medical trauma. These are all examples of how we can expose our horses to trauma unknowingly on a consistent basis. From there, it's common to feel as if you're completely disconnected from your horse during their trauma response. It can feel defeating if this is a misunderstood cycle of behavior. However, it's far more important to learn how to meet your horse where they're at in a situation like this and to set your dominance cap off to the side. Now, do humans and horses experience trauma in the same way? The short answer is no. The reason behind this is that horses are prey animals. In the wild, each suspicious object is evaluated for its threat level. Because of a consistent need to defend themselves from predators throughout evolution, horses are particularly sensitive to threat and changes in their environment. After a threat response is activated, the herd will then choose whether to react to it or not before the nervous system moves from fight or flight back to rest and digest. This process varies in timing for each individual horse and is a process that happens multiple times a day with horses in the wild. With the natural nervous system of the horse wired to respond in this manner, trauma rarely results through this response. The trauma tends to surface more readily when a horse isn't in their natural environment and influenced by humans more than their herd, where it's not uncommon that their needs are misunderstood or not taken into consideration. Now, with all of that being said, horses have adapted to life with us humans surprisingly well. In fact, so well, it's not uncommon to witness horses who have learned how to shut down to their outside world. They may visibly appear spaced out or in a state of dissociation. This is commonly seen in horses with very mentally demanding jobs, such as trail ride horses, city carriage horses, and even some very busy school horses. Now, don't get me wrong here. This is not to say that horses with these jobs can't enjoy them and that their owners are negligent by any means. These types of activities simply put a horse at a higher risk for dissociation. A dissociated horse may also freeze when faced with something they perceive as a threat. This deer in the headlights response is the very real work of the parasympathetic nervous system shutting down the body in an attempt to prepare the horse for death. It may sound extreme, but that's what's happening physiologically during this response. As flight animals, horses are wired to try to run from threat first, then try to fight the threat. Freeze is generally a last resort. If they can't physically leave, they mentally leave. As humans, it's very common for us to turn to our cell phones, a book, or TV shows as a way to escape the confines of our reality. I think we can all agree that binge-watching Netflix instead of dwelling on a persistent issue in our lives feels more satisfying in the moment. However, with a less developed prefrontal cortex, horses simply shut down completely when faced with a recurring and stressful situation over time. A shut-down horse can be harder to identify than a horse outwardly expressing their stress. Here's another example. As humans, we have the option to turn to alcohol, nicotine, illicit drugs, or other addictive means as another option to escape our reality. This same response is seen in horses with stall vices such as cribbing, weaving, or pacing. Stress in horses can also manifest as dangerous behavior, or even physical illnesses such as ulcers. It's important for us, if we want to be advocates for our horses, to notice these signs, pay attention to our horses' boundaries, identify what might be causing the stress, and practice presence and attentiveness instead of putting additional stress on our horse to just cut it out and push through. This approach disregards the psychology and emotional capacity of our horses and often makes the situation worse. Now, in severe cases, it's not uncommon to see horses that have a history of abuse to be completely shut down. This is a last resort when a horse is repeatedly experiencing trauma and is a form of learned helplessness. Getting a horse to submit and stop resisting during training often leads to emotional flooding, where a horse will enter the freeze response and may appear to be respecting their handler when in reality this response has been brought about by fear. This approach will not lead to a trusting, connected relationship based on mutual respect. All right, you've crossed your horse's boundaries. Now what? When I'm working with a horse, I prefer there to be a level of respectful expression. The opportunity for a horse to say no is often seen as a bad thing when it comes to training. But in reality, this is where, in a healthy training situation, there's simply an opportunity presenting to slow down and work through the issue at the horse's level. If boundaries are repeatedly crossed and your horse feels increasingly shut down during every training interaction, don't panic about it or beat yourself up. First, it's important to understand and identify the difference between shutdown and relaxation, stress, or panic. This varies horse to horse, and it's important to know your specific horse and situation. As an example, if I've been working with a horse for some time and we're working through a training issue together, the horse may show me relaxation by a lowered head, yawning, licking and chewing, and relaxing a hind leg. That same horse postured with tense lips, ears fixed in one position, frozen feet, and tight lips may be shutting down. When talking about stress versus panic, A horse might alternate between circling me and investigating a scary object, which would show me there's a decent level of stress present. But bolting off and dragging me along at the end of the lead rope would tell me, in most cases, that the horse has now begun to panic. Again, these differences are slight and varied in each situation with each horse. So reading your individual horse's behavior is a crucial skill, and it doesn't just come about overnight. So be gentle with yourself. And I wanted to throw in a cautionary note here. It's also important to understand that some horses that have experienced trauma will move from the freeze response to the fight response with little warning. A horse may appear shut down, and with more pressure, suddenly exhibit dangerous behavior. This is another example of why slowing down, being patient, and addressing issues as they arise is a safer approach for both us and our horses. Okay, so let's talk about how to work through trauma without working against your horse. If your horse is triggered by a specific object or situation, and you've done your homework to identify it, this is wonderful. Though it can seem silly to us, triggers can be as simple as a whip, a stall, a horse trailer, or even a space, such as an open field. Once the root cause of the trauma response is identified, the work to dissolve the fear has already begun. Let's say, for example, that you buy a new horse without knowing a lot of his history, and you go out to lunge him. Upon picking up the lunge whip, he immediately goes to bolt away from you. The whip seems to be the trigger here. This is where you, as your horse's advocate, have a choice. You could try desensitizing him to the whip by slapping it on the ground, draping it over him, or stroking him with it. Now let's hang on to this idea, as it will be useful further down the line. Another option is you could simply recognize that this was a huge reaction and choose instead to slow down and take a few steps back. Here's a basic example of what I may do in a situation like this. First off, I would abandon the idea of lunging for today. I'd remove the lunge line and the cavesson. I'd replace it with gear such as a rope halter and a lead. And next, I would allow the horse to regulate his nervous system. This could look like hand walking, simple maneuvers such as yielding the hindquarters in hand, or something mental like having him straddle a ground pole. Or I may even just run my hands along his neck and withers to bring his focus back to his body and feet. Once he's standing calmly, I might allow him to just stand for a few moments. It's important to note here in this example that I didn't simply turn this theoretical horse back out. I simply changed the course of the training session with plans to reapproach the trigger when it's safe to do so. Next, I might bring the whip back into his sight. I might just lay it on the arena sand at this point. Using patience and taking my time, I would look for any sign of the fight, flight, or freeze response beginning to take over. If this happened, I'd step back. I might go back to one of those grounding exercises mentioned above. Eventually, he'll show a level of curiosity about the whip. This is a huge step. Ideally, I'd get a sigh, a yawn, or some licking and chewing after he's shown that curiosity and investigative behavior. And right there, I'd probably stop for the day. From there, I'd begin exploring boundaries around the whip. How does he react when I pick it up? Will he still investigate it then and stand quietly without showing signs of shutdown? Or do I need to let him start with the whip on the ground at the start of the second session? What I'm looking for here is that he's able to stay relaxed and present as I begin to ask him questions about his boundaries. From there, I can begin to work on showing him that the whip is not a threat. I can do this by stroking him with it, hand walking with the whip as he walks beside me, or letting him investigate the sound of it making contact with the ground. If I had started here, I would have just continued to violate his boundaries, and I may have caused that emotional flooding that we don't want. This may take days or weeks, and it's not the only thing I can work on with him during this time. I can work with him on the ground in other ways that don't involve a whip. We can go out for a hack, or simply spend time getting to know each other in other ways. Once he's comfortable around the whip and no longer associates it with pain and fear, I can then begin to use it during lunging sessions. Now, I understand that that was a fairly basic example, but I trust it helped you to understand how to look beyond the issue at hand and pick up on the more subtle signs of trauma if your horse is experiencing it. Different levels of trauma and different manifestations of it will take longer or shorter amounts of time to work through. However, with patience and mindfulness, it's possible to rewire the trauma response and move past it as you progress in your training with your horse. If you're in need of more guidance on this topic, please feel free to reach out. I'd be happy to help you assess the specific barriers you're experiencing with your horse and provide some tips and solutions on how to move past them. If you'd like to learn more about me, feel free to visit my website, heartcenteredhorsemanshipacademy.com. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can shoot me an email, Kimberly@heartcenteredhorsemanshipacademy.com. As always, let's make your next ride a confident, happy, connected, and harmonious one, and we will talk soon. Take care.